How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Okay.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
BSM presents The Tim Meisberg Show, streaming live on WBSM.com and the WBSM app. Call 508-996-0500. Send us app chat messages and open line voicemails using the WBSM app. Now, The Tim Meisberg Show.
Welcome back in third and final hour of the program here on Monday morning, and that means Jack Spillane is with us. Good morning, Jack. How are you?
Good to be here.
So yesterday was a monumental day, the wedding of Marcus and Kayla Ferro. So congratulations to them.
No, uh-huh.
I mean, in addition to that, I said of all the days to have your wedding, and you know, the news for it goes, yeah, I wonder what everybody's going to be talking about during the whole wedding. But
I did not even know Marcus was getting married. Wow.
Yeah. Well, they kept it kind of low key.
Yeah.
But it was a great wedding, a great ceremony. But yes, the big news is that President Biden decided he's not going to seek re-election anymore. Just your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, it's one of those events like you'll remember where you were when you heard it, even though you kind of knew what was coming or probably coming. It just, to actually hear a sitting president, I'm old enough to remember when Lyndon Johnson came on TV and said, I will not seek and I will not be a candidate. I will not accept the nomination of my party. I think this was a foregone conclusion. I think when Nancy Pelosi let it be known that the decision was up to Joe, but he had already made it, and she kept saying the decision is up to Joe, that meant
just kind
that
of putting his thumb on him a little bit there.
He hadn't made the right decision yet. The bottom line is that his money had all dried up, and when you have a steady stream of people from your own party every day coming out and saying, please step down, you're fighting a two-front war. And I think there was some question that his aides, who, after all, their own careers are invested in working for him, were not giving him some of the information from the polls about how bad it had gotten. Kamala Harris was even out polling him versus Trump. And so
well, he even said during the press conference after the NATO meeting, he even said that the polls don't show that he was behind.
Yeah, there were some polls initially soon after the debate fiasco that, you know, it takes a while for polls to catch up because people are still trying to process the information. You know, a pollster asks you the day after, you might say, well, I don't know, I'm still trying to understand this.
Right, DVR'd it and I haven't even watched it yet.
Yeah, but the longer it got from that debate, and the more people began to focus on the fact that he had lost a step. Like, you know, I still think he is a guy, you know, who a lot of the times really understands and is very coherent, but he's old and he's tires easily. I think he had a cold that night. He's just too old for that job. And I think the issue had become all about, is he too old, as opposed to Trump's shortcomings, which is he trustworthy, is for lack of a better word. And so I think that they finally got to him, and it was sort of like a come-to-Jesus moment, and he came.
But you mentioned that it was, you know, the money had dried up, but then yesterday they got, you know, a record number of donations sent in, so.
Yeah, once he had endorsed her, the floodgates went out. And it's a different dynamic. You know, the Democratic Party, like all parties, has different factions in it. And, you know, it's no secret that Joe Biden's base was blue-collar white men. And, you know, that's what the attraction to him was, and her base is people, women of color, you know, and so it's going to change the race significantly in that you will see her numbers look better in places like Georgia, North Carolina, possibly Arizona, whereas his numbers were much better than Hillary's in places like Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin. So I think the nature of the race shifts slightly now, and I think a lot of it will be, people don't vote for the second person on the ticket, but the second person on the ticket can do damage, and it's kind of like a sideshow. I think J.D. Vance has some upsides and some downsides, and it'll be interesting to see who she selects. The early betting is on Mark Kelly, the former astronaut from Arizona.
Which I like as an option.
I don't think he's the most articulate guy. I think Josh Shapiro from Pennsylvania would be a better person in making the case against J.D. Vance, but I think Josh Shapiro is Jewish, and a black woman and a Jewish man on a ticket, you know, they may be, I mean, they wouldn't say it like this, but I think they may be a little bit reluctant to do that.
I think Mark Kelly kind of negate some of the, you know, using the word that I used in the last hour, the misogyny that people might feel. Because, I mean, here's a guy who has proven himself in the military as an astronaut. Like, this is a man's man for people that are looking for that.
That misogyny is out there. It's hardwired into us, all of us, I think, and particularly men. And I think that, you know, we're going to have to see where it goes, even some women. This great story about Margaret Thatcher, who really was, you know, her and Indira Gandhi were the first woman leaders on the world stage. And Margaret Thatcher got the nickname the Iron Lady, but she was said to be much softer, you know, in private, you know, in family settings with her husband and children. And she made a deliberate decision to project this persona of strength whenever she was on camera. I think Hillary Clinton might have made a similar decision. And I think sometimes the feeling is that if you're going to be a woman at the highest level in politics, you have to have this steely, you know, almost masculine exterior. And I want to make sure I pronounce her name right after this morning. Kamala Harris.
Kamala.
Hasn't really, I mean, she's a very serious person. She's been a prosecutor. She's very smart. But she also can be a little feminine and sort of girlish. Her laughter has been made fun of sometimes. And so it'll be interesting to see if men and women will accept that. You know, I think that there really is no other alternative. People are saying there's going to be other people competing against her. But Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, has already endorsed her. Shapiro from Pennsylvania has endorsed her. Gretchen Whitmer, a very attractive governor of Michigan, has said she won't run for anything this year. And she, you know, president or vice president. So I think it's really, she's the presumptive nominee now.
Well, it'll certainly be an interesting couple of months. And actually, just an interesting couple of days, really, coming up here.
We are living through history. And I would like to make the point that it was George Washington who set the stage for a person who has power at the top of the very top level, walking away from it. And that's why many people consider him to be the greatest president, even though Lincoln, you know, did the great things by basically making everyone equal. But Washington set the example, which people at the time couldn't believe that someone could have power and walk away from it, because he wanted it to be a democratic, small d, democratic country.
So let's get into some of the local news. Before we do that, let's contractually obligated to play the Rolling Stones here. We don't really have to. I just say that.
I'm glad you do. It's our brand.
And Jack, before we move into some of the local issues, just a clarification: when you said misogyny is hardwired into us, what exactly do you mean by that? Because I'm getting some messages about that.
Okay, so I think that traditionally we have had male and female roles, and I think a lot of us, even though we realize those roles were not true, still have some deep-seated unconscious feelings about it. And both men and women. You know, it was women who led the fight against the Equal Rights Amendment, after all. Now, that doesn't mean it's the only thing that's hardwired into us, but I think it is. I think racism, in some respects, is hardwired into us, and I think that we have to evolve to overcome those things. I think we're totally capable of doing that, but I think that there is a, maybe if not hardwired, a deep-seated, you know, feeling about what are proper roles for men and women, and whether a woman can be a military leader, for instance. You only have to go back to Joan of Arc to know that you know she can, and we certainly have had very aggressive women leaders, Catherine the Great in Russia. People would say Margaret Thatcher during the Falklands War was a great military leader. So I just think people have those deep-seated feelings, even people who are progressive. And I think that it's better to acknowledge them and to work through them. I remember when women first ran the Boston Marathon, Jock Semple, the guy who ran the race, going out and interrupting that woman who tried to run, you know, saying, women can't do this, women can't run 26 miles. And of course they could. But I think that those attitudes, you know, are deep-seated within us. And so I think that's why men and women vote differently. You know, all the research shows that. I don't mean to offend anybody by saying that.
No, I
certainly don't believe that women can't, that there are things that, I mean, there are issues of strength, and, you know, men are by and large, not always, bigger than women, and there are issues of strength there, but women can do all kinds of things that we originally didn't realize that. So I hope that doesn't sound sexist. I don't mean it to be.
I didn't take it as it, but I just wanted, you know, to give you a chance to clear that up a little bit. But let's move into some local issues. And first of all, let's go all the way back to, you know, early last week. And something that you and I had talked about in the past is the Business Improvement District in downtown New Bedford no longer happening.
Yeah, it was interesting to see how quickly it fell apart. They did not do their homework. Either they did not do their homework or they did not want to do their homework. There was, I forget her name, Rose, the woman who did the research, Rick Miller's wife, Rose Miller, pointed out, you know, did the research and pointed out that they did not have a majority of the property owners, nor a majority of, I think the other category was business owners in the district, as they were required to. Now, they tried to make a rationalization that, well, they're not required because some of those property owners were so small that they weren't going to be required to contribute, or some of them were nonprofits that weren't going to be required to contribute. But the bottom line was they hadn't done their homework. And the other bottom line was that they had not convinced very popular small businesses in the district, like Destination Soups, The Baker, Calico, to a certain extent, No Problemo, you know, very popular districts, you know, to back them. And you can't have, we're doing this business improvement districts and have the most well-known businesses who are renters from those buildings, by and large, not all of them, but many of them, say we don't want it, or we don't feel like we have enough say in it. So I think Steve Silverstein saw the writing on the wall, and he's a smart guy. They withdrew it.
I think that there's, you know, one of the things that I noticed about that is there was a very generic idea of what they would do to improve the district. And I don't know if maybe they were giving the business owners or the building owners more information than they were giving us, but I didn't see anything that says, here's what we think we can make better. Here's what we think we can make better. I just heard, we're going to maintain the sidewalks better. We're going to do some advertising. Like, I think if you had a more coherent plan of what it is that you planned on doing, you might have sold some more people. But ultimately, you know, you saw people that saw somebody that, even though he owns a business downtown, they saw an outsider coming in trying to dictate how they were going to do business there.
Yeah, it was nonspecific in many cases. There wasn't an exact thing that wasn't being done that they were pointing to. Now, maybe you could say that they weren't doing enough street plantings, or they weren't doing enough signage, or they weren't keeping things clean, or police enforcement wasn't good enough. But they didn't point to it. They were very generic in what they said. And I also think the fact that the moving force was a guy from San Diego, California, was not helping it. I just think it needed to be more organic, more local, in its roots. And I know he owned a property here, but he bought that property after he first became interested in in it. And I just think it was, they didn't have buy-in from the merchants.
Do you think that this is a sign that maybe there should be something a little bit more grassroots amongst the businesses downtown to try to step up and say, we can do some of this stuff ourselves? I mean, I know there's already organizations that exist that try to do that, but do they need to put more effort into that?
It's certainly worth thinking about. I would like to point that this whole idea has somewhat of an odor of privatization to it. You know, privatization as we've seen in trash pickup, privatization as you sometimes see on the state level with prisons. A lot of people would like to privatize the school systems. Charlie Baker a few years ago talked about privatizing the next expansion of the commuter rail. I think that privatization sounds good sometimes in theory. I have reservations in it. There's that great scene in the movie Lincoln where people who own the tolls come into Lincoln and they're upset because the state is, the federal government is pushing through the railroad or whatever, and they want to know whether they still will get the benefit from charging the tolls. And I just think you have a special interest, a private interest then, that owns something that everybody has to use, the downtown or the roads. Or I mean, just in the instance of trash pickup in New Bedford, you know, it sounds good, initially saves some money, but after a while, you wonder, because there's only a few companies that do that kind of work, and then they set the rates, and whether they collude or whatever, you're really not getting anything cheaper. The only difference is it's going into private hands versus the people owning it. You know, so you can have these issues, whether the people owning it as part of government is socialism versus capitalism. You know, I mean, I consider myself a capitalist, but there's also crony capitalism, and there's you know, unregulated capitalism where a certain group of people, you know, own things that are to the benefit of everybody, and it can be a monopoly, and so.
I mean, not to mention with trash, if it's coming out of the taxes, and it's municipal pickup, people put the trash out. If it's private pickup and they have to pay for it, you know, commercially or whatever, then they don't bring the trash out all the time, then they don't pay the bill, then the trash builds up. You know?
Yeah, and I think that's why you see in some suburbs, even like Dartmouth, you have to pay for your trash pickup, but it would be very difficult to do that in New Bedford, where I think the figure is 67% of the population are renters. And, you know, if these are people who are barely getting by, living hand to mouth, and you say, now you got to pay for your trash to pick up, well, people are going to start looking for ways to dispose of it, you know, illegally and environmentally hazardously. And so New Bedford has never gone to a system. Fall River talked about it, and CM Sutter was bounced out of office largely because of it going to
the pay-as-you-throw system.
Yeah. I think it's the difference between a middle-class community like Dartmouth and a largely blue-collar community like New Bedford. Making people pay for that extra fee, you know, is questionable.
We do have to take a break in a moment, but let's get into the wind turbine issue a little bit before we do, because this is something that, unfortunately, people who have been, you know, saying right along, like, this is going to be a disaster. What happened over the past week has been a bit of a disaster.
Yeah, it has been. I do think it's important to point out that the people who oppose wind, and this is in Anastasia Lennon's story in the New Bedford Light, the people who are opposed to it to begin with are the loudest voices criticizing it now, saying this is going to be a disaster. And the people who support it say, no, this is just something that happens with industrial businesses. I mean, certainly the same people who oppose wind don't have any problem with fossil fuel industries in the ocean, that being the oil derricks. Or, you know, we've seen the Exxon Valdez disaster in Alaska. We've seen platform, the oil platform that was on fire a few years ago in the Gulf of Mexico. It's not like things can't go wrong with other kinds of energy sources that are located in the ocean. It's certainly concerning that the company did not seem to notify Nantucket quickly enough about this situation to protect their beaches. But I do think that when you have industry in the ocean, you know, things are going to happen. It's interesting to me because one of the criticisms of the turbines is that they're going to kill the right whales. Well, who was the criticism of before the killing the right whales before the wind turbines? It was that the fishing industry was killing the right whales, getting tangled in their gear. So the fishing industry is an industrial industry now, too. You know, we have the ability to scrape the bottom of the ocean and basically pull up everything. So I think that there are subterranean issues on wind that have to do with fishing industry, that have to do with people who support traditional energy versus alternative energy, you know, that have to do with political affiliations. And so I think that this is more complex. And when you get a catastrophe, which is a very worrisome catastrophe, you have to find out what went wrong. Was it not installed correctly? Was it not manufactured correctly? But you have to fix it like any other industrial concern.
I did see a comment somebody made where they said, you know, a shipwreck that goes down has, you know, just as much of an environmental impact as what happened with the turbines. Yeah. Does that mean we keep ships out of the water?
That's right. So my position would be, yes, it is a matter of concern. Let's address it. But let's not, like, you know, say, well, this just proves that you can't have any wind turbines out there. And I think that meme is out there. Like,
nobody said that offshore wind was going to be a breeze. I had to do it. All right, we got to take a break here. We'll be back in just a couple moments. More with Jax Blaine coming up. Zeppelin fan?
I did. When I was younger, I was.
I think they're okay. I'm not really a huge fan.
Yeah, they were very big when I was in college. Of course, Stairway to Heaven, but there were other songs. They had a couple of albums there where we were all listening to them back in the day.
But come to find out years later, they've stolen a lot of their stuff.
Really?
Oh, yeah. They've been taking a chord over it, and somebody claimed that he wrote Stairway to Heaven, and yeah, it's pretty interesting. I thought the devil wrote Stairway to Heaven. That's what I thought.
Well, you know, this business of people suing other people over there, I mean, George Harrison, others have been sued. I do take it with a grain of salt because I think there's only so many melodies out there, and you know,
oh, some of these Led Zeppelin ones were like pretty direct.
Yeah, I would say that Led Zeppelin was a great band in just the way they presented, even if they were just covering these things. I mean, I don't know about taking credit for them, but just, you know, Robert Plant and, you know, the way they sang.
Oh, fantastic musicianship. Yeah, yeah. Amazing. But just, I don't know, I never really connected with it, I guess.
Yeah, you're a little too young.
Well, my age doesn't have anything to do with it. I mean, everybody my age loves them too. I just don't see it. But right now, it's time to go into the newsroom and get all the top stories of the day from Phil Devitt.
Democrats praise Biden for dropping out of the race, while Republicans want him out now. The Secret Service director readies for the hot seat. And what is a big honor from the U.S. Postal Service?
From the WBSM newsroom, this is WBSM News.
Top Democrats are praising President Biden for his decision to drop out of the 2024 race. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer said Biden put his party and our future first. Former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said Biden is a patriotic American who's always put the country first. The Democratic delegations from at least five states have endorsed Vice President Harris for president. Meanwhile, the national finance chair for the Biden Victory Fund telling NBC News he believes there will be enough pledged delegates for Harris to be the nominee by the end of business on Wednesday. Donald Trump supporters are accusing Harris of covering up Biden's struggles. A Trump PAC just launched a new ad accusing Harris of, in their words, being, quote, in on it and covering up Biden's mental decline. It goes on to claim Kamala knew Joe couldn't do the job, so she did. Not all that long ago on NBC News, prior to his bombshell announcement on Sunday, President Biden was still insisting he could beat Donald Trump.
We knew this was going to be a close race from the moment he announced. The idea that we are in a situation where, if you look at all the polling data shows a lot of different things, but there's no wide gap between us.
Top Republicans want President Biden to step down now, before the end of his term. House Majority Leader Steve Scalise suggested Democrats have known Biden has health issues.
They've all known, just like we knew, by the way, for the last few years that Joe Biden was in cognitive decline. Don't let anybody tell you they found it out the night of the debate.
Secret Service Director Kimberly Cheadle will be on Capitol Hill today as lawmakers demand answers over the attempt on former President Trump's life. She'll testify before the House Oversight Committee, where she'll be questioned over how a gunman was allowed to get within shooting distance of the former president at a Pennsylvania rally earlier this month. Delta Airlines is apologizing for thousands of canceled flights over the weekend following massive computer disruptions. It started Friday after a faulty software update from cybersecurity firm CrowdStrike caused millions of computers to crash around the world. For Delta, that translated into more than 3,500 canceled flights. The CDC says two people have died due to a listeria outbreak in multiple states that's connected to deli meat. Tammy Trujillo with the details.
In a warning issued Friday, the CDC said at least 28 others have been hospitalized, but the number of those sick from the outbreak may actually be higher due to some milder cases not being tested for listeria. It's unclear what meat is behind the illnesses, and no recalls have been issued. Most of the people who became sick reported eating liverwurst or turkey, while some said they ate ham prior to falling ill. The two deaths were reported in New Jersey and Illinois. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
Twisters is tearing up the box office, grossing $80.5 million in its premiere weekend. It marked the biggest start ever for a natural disaster film in North America. And the U.S. Postal Service now has a stamp honoring late Jeopardy host Alex Trebek. Daniel Martindale with the details.
This afternoon, a ceremony marking the stamp's first day of issue will be held at John Cayley Park at Sony Pictures Studios in Culver City. Trebek died of pancreatic cancer in November of 2020. Today would have been his 84th birthday. Trebek's widow Jean, current Jeopardy host Ken Jennings, and Michael Elston, Secretary of the Board of Governors of the U.S. Postal Service, will all speak at the ceremony. I'm Daniel Martindale.
WBSM Sports.
Red Sox lost to the Los Angeles Dodgers 9-6. The team is off to Colorado to play the Rockies tonight. First pitch at 8:40.
Now, your ABC 6 South Coast forecast.
Sun and clouds this morning, temperature around 80, feeling that humidity already. Mostly sunny this afternoon, low 80s overnight tonight. Clouds increase with temperatures around 70. Few isolated showers and thunderstorms cannot be ruled out along the interior. As we head into tomorrow through Thursday, pattern does turn more active and some showers and thunderstorms cannot be ruled out. From the ABC 6 Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Ceci Del Carmen on New Bedford's News Talk Station, 1420 WBSM.
Weather on WBSM is brought to you by SeaStreak. Whether it's a daycation or a staycation, get there with SeaStreak. Visit SeaStreak.com for reservations to Martha's Vineyard or Nantucket. I'm Phil Devitt for WBSM News. Stay up to date with New Bedford's News Talk Station, WBSM, and get all of our content and breaking news alerts with the WBSM app.
All right, we are back. Turning on the light with Jack Spillane, the semi-retired Jack Spillane.
Semi-retired. It's a good ring to it.
But by my calculations, you should be working on something this week. He's like, I do it when I want to do it.
I actually am. I think I'll keep that under my hat, although someone in the room actually may know what I'm working on. Listen,
I just want to tune people up to keep checking newbedfordlight.org for your columns. You don't have to tell us what it's about.
No, we do just have proprietary feelings over at the Light about not having our stuff stolen from us.
Totally understandable. I just want people to keep going to the site every day and checking to see if you have a column up. Doesn't matter what the topic is.
Turn on the light.
So, but you do have, over at newbedfordlight.org, they do have a very important article today, something Chris was talking about last week, too. The lawmakers are finally moving forward to try to end this home equity theft that we know has been an issue right here in New Bedford.
Yeah, and this is a credit to Senator Montigny, who I sometimes disagree with, but I have to give him full credit for this. This has been really just legalized theft for a long time, where traditionally it was just the municipalities that could take, you know, all the value of a property, even though that the, you know, the parts that, of the taxes that were unpaid were minimal, not minimal, but relatively smaller, and just, you know, take all of someone's goods. The Supreme Court has ruled you can't do that. We had these vulture companies coming in, and, you know, because they were well capitalized, they could, you know, buy up properties that the city didn't have the resources to chase. And it's going to be less lucrative for them to do that, because that, thanks to Senator Martigny's legislation, which lessens the amount of interest that can be charged by the municipality, that does not allow them to retain that equity in a property, which nowadays, because property is worth so much, is quite a bit of money, much more than it used to be when probably those laws were written. I will say that I would have liked to have seen the legislation, and I don't know that it doesn't. It wasn't mentioned in the New Bedford Light article. I would have liked to have seen the legislation include some provisions for allowing municipalities to get these properties out of the hands of the heirs quicker. I mean, Massachusetts has some of the most really onerous laws in the nation in terms of when a property has been, the owner dies and there's no apparent heirs, and it can go on for years and years and years before the municipality can take it over, even though it's in foreclosure. And the reason for that is that you have to go through these distant relatives who may not even have anything to do with New Bedford, may not have even known the property owner, but they're a distant relative and they have claims on the property. And it takes years and years for the municipality to gain full control of that property. Why is that a problem? It's a problem because you end up having all these untended properties. And it can even happen in the suburbs where they're just tied up in court forever. And so I think that's the other side of the problem. Senator Martigny's legislation has addressed one side of it, which I think is good, but we need to go even further.
It's also, this legislation has also brought down the interest that they have to pay on this too, to make it more manageable so that, you know, people can maybe get their homes back for the, because there was one case that's cited here in the story of a person who owed less than $1,000 in property tax and they lost a, you know, $200,000 property over it.
Yes. I would like to see the city have a person whose job was to work with people who are behind on their property taxes. Now, some people are just no counts. No matter what you do, you know, they're not, even if they have the money, they're just not going to pay it. And those people should be prosecuted. One of the problems in why these predatory companies could come in was because the city is limited in its resources to chase these people, especially, as I said, with Massachusetts laws, you know, giving them so many attempts, such distant relatives and people to have claims on these properties. But it is a problem. I guess Martigny's legislation would cut the interest from 16 to 8%. Yeah. That sounds good, but you have to be a little bit careful because the municipalities already don't have the ability to chase these people that are not paying. And I will point out, when you don't pay your property taxes, that doesn't mean that the taxes don't get paid. It just means that all your neighbors pay the taxes. Everybody else has to, because the city levy is what the city's levy is. The levy is how much money it has to raise for its commitments on spendings. So the levy is what the levy is. And if you don't pay your taxes, other people have to make up the difference.
And I know, you know, obviously every case is different, but in some cases, you know, you've got people, like you said, who just actively don't pay their property taxes and are like, yeah, good luck trying to get it from me. But then you have other people who make honest mistakes or fall into issues that maybe, you know, it's a temporary setback that they could later recover from, but by then it's too late. They've already sold off the debt to this other company.
Yeah, like everything else, there's the nurse who, you know, is single and she's working and she's fallen $1,000, $2,000 behind in her taxes and is having a hard time making it up. And then there's the out-of-town landlord who has lots of properties and, you know, just is slow in paying and could well pay and also could well afford to fight the city. So there's different types of property owners and it's hard to write legislation that equitably covers them all and also is fair to... and I just want to reemphasize that point. The fairness to the city is fairness to the other property taxpayers who have to make up the difference when people don't pay. But you know, the bill is still the bill.
But as you pointed out, you know, the city doesn't have the resources to have somebody, and they should, that can work with those people to say, okay, tell us your situation, and then to kind of say, okay, this is not somebody that we want to send off to this company. You know, the elderly woman who owes, you know, $700 in property taxes, we don't want to see her lose her home over
this. Well, if we can work with her. Keep in mind that some of those elderly women don't want to pay either. And, you know, you can be a cheapskate and be wealthy and be a cheapskate and who doesn't have any money. So you want to try to work with people. So the city does have to have some teeth for people who are what you would call scofflaws or just recalcitrant. That, you know, they just, you say to them, if you send us $100 a month, will that be okay? and they still say no, or they still miss the payments. Yeah. So,
and then the other side of it too is they're going to get another property tax bill while they're trying to pay that one off.
Yeah. So you want to work with them, but you also want to protect the other property taxpayers, and that's the other property taxpayers is another word for the city government.
But we're getting into kind of some of the minutia about this. The important part about this is that they will no longer be stealing the equity when somebody does get into that situation.
Yes, yes.
Which is, you know, that I just couldn't understand how that was even okay to begin with.
Yeah, I think it's a remnant of a bygone day when property, you know, now property is worth so much that young people can't even get in. But it hasn't always been that way. I remember my father talking about the house that he built for our family in 1957, I believe, cost him $24,000, which seemed to be a fairly expensive house. And that's 1957, $24,000. So you're dealing with amounts of money now. That house today is probably worth, I don't know, $750,000 and $800,000. So it's a different world.
And I think the downside to, like you said, you know, these, it's going to be less attractive for these companies to come in and make this, you know, steal this equity basically from people. So now if the city's not tracking this down and these companies aren't interested, like, now what's going to happen for being able to track down the folks that do need to pay?
So as far as I could see from, and I would have to talk to Mark or to Audra Riding from his office, that his legislation did address one side of the problem, and that was, you know, just this theft that was allowed people to steal the equity of people's property, but it did not address the other side of it, which is the slow process that Massachusetts has for resolving tax foreclosures. And there has to be a more speedy process because it hurts everybody when you have, I mean, you have neighborhoods in New Bedford where it's not unusual for houses to sit idle for 10, 15 years. You know, even houses that have been burnt out. It's not good.
Well, we got to take a break here. 508-996-0500. If you would like to share your thoughts with myself and Jack Spillane, we're going to take a break and be back in just a few moments.
The name, and it sends him to the finest school.
And we are back, and that song was selected by Jack Spillane.
And thanks for playing that. That's the early Elton John. And if you listen to that piano riff, it's just, that's why he is, as much as I like Billy Joel, Elton John is the piano man. Like that early piano from his early albums, just great stuff.
Except that new commercial he has, that new PSA he's doing where you can tell he's reading off the cue cards. I'm like, oh, they could have just let him take a step back. It wouldn't look as obvious.
Well, Elton's gotten a little long in the tooth also.
That is true. Let's take a phone call here. 508-996-0500. You're on with Jack Spillane. Hello.
Hi. I did think it was horrible that people were getting their entire properties snapped up because they might have fallen on, you know, a situation where they couldn't pay them right then. And I feel like they should have been worked with. But I also think in regards to the you know, whoever the taxes are owed to, I don't know why, just like any other types of taxes, they put fees, late fees and whatnot. And if the person is deceased and they have to put in resources to track down maybe the next, you know, whoever the property's left to, I think it should be like, okay, a certain percentage of the property is now owned by the city. So you don't get the entire property until you pay back, which I understand is sort of the way it is, until you pay those taxes. They shouldn't be able to transfer the property or sell it until those taxes are paid up. And if it's sold, boom, 10% or whatever the percentage works down to goes to who the money's owed to. It seems like a more logical, and notifications, legal notifications obviously have to go out. But in the meantime, the city won't lose altogether, and there's a better chance of keeping the property with the rightful owner. I don't know. Does any of that make sense?
Yeah. I would agree with all of that. I think that is actually the way the system works, that even if the city can't give away all the equity in the property, you still have to pay the taxes and the penalties that you owed. I mean, because as I said before, the other taxpayers have been paying for it while you owed that money.
Right. So I wouldn't even be opposed to there being an additional, you know, maybe 3% or whatever it works out to, in addition to what is owed and the fees, it's like now we've gone on time trying to find you, and there's basically an abandoned property there. So if you want it, you have to owe an additional whatever the percentage is. You know, I don't think that's unreasonable. If you're not in touch with whoever left you this property, we have to literally go hunt you down. You're not even checking on this dead person. So, you know, maybe cough up a little more. You don't walk away with the whole property. But I think that's kind of reasonable, the way everything else works. Is I don't think it was ever reasonable to basically steal somebody's property. And if they took it, you think they would take what they're owed and maybe some fees, and then the rest goes to that person. Hold it with unclaimed properties, just like the rest of the state does. You know, with dividends and things like that, you can't just disappear with it. I can't believe it's gone on that long. I'm glad they changed that. All right, thanks.
Thank you. And I don't know if you want to react to that, Jack, before we take a break.
My understanding is that Massachusetts was one of the few states that allowed this wholesale equity. There are a few others. And, you know, you have to give them the benefit of the doubt. So what was the thinking when they allowed that? And I suppose it is because, you know, it's not fair to the other property taxpayers who have to make up the balance. But when it began to be these predatory private companies coming in and buying up the liens, then it was a whole different ball of wax. I also think property is worth so much now. It really is the primary source of wealth, and not just wealth, but astronomical wealth. From the baby boomers who are my age and older, who have these properties and wealth that we have not figured out a way to allow young people to get into it the way they used to on a normal salary, because the properties are just worth too much anymore. So it was a bad system. I like to think that they had a reason for it when they did it in the beginning, because you hate to think that they were just evil, but clearly it wasn't working. And I don't agree with the Supreme Court often, and I think, I'm not sure, but I think they were right on this one.
All right, let's take our final break here. We'll be right back. And we're going to wrap things up here with Jack Spillane, New Bedford Light columnist, who won't be here next week because I won't be here next week. So we'll convene again in 2 weeks.
That's okay. It works well with my semi-retirement.
Yeah, we can talk about your column that'll be coming out this week.
We can.
And then, you know, then it won't be a secret anymore. But and who knows where we could be in that amount of time. So I'll take some nice photos in Gettysburg, though, and show them to you.
That's a trip that my brother and I have been talking about making for a long time.
Gettysburg. Highly recommend it. Maybe not in July when it's 90-something degrees, though.
Yeah.
But it's an amazing place. And very, very, when you're there, you feel every bit of it, you know?
Yeah.
Even just around the town.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.